first-time investors will underestimate what it takes to get these properties where they need to be to get their unfair share of business. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore. We're back with Whiskey Wednesday.
Yes, sir.
Our main man, Jake Sheehy.
Yes, sir.
What's up, buddy?
Man, feeling amazing. Great day to be alive.
Start of the year. Sir. We're just like kind of everybody's rolling. I heard National Quitters Day is behind us now. So if you're still working on your goals, good for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Way to stick it out. Yeah. Way to stick it out past January 9th, I think was.
Already? It's only the 9th?
Like a couple. There's a few, like from like the 9th to the 12th, like is like kind of your, is National Quitters Day.
Oh, well, that's why. Hey, if you're still in there, proud of you guys. Keep going. Keep pushing.
Yeah,
that's,
I think that our, listeners are more the type that are usually, they're making it past January 9th, I would assume.
I completely agree. Okay. We got stuff, some amazing stuff, you know, to follow through for the rest of the year for today's episode. A lot of good stuff. Want me to go through it?
Let's hear what we're talking about.
Okay, so we got two things we got to go off first. We're going to talk about Airbnb 2026 predictions. They just came out with some new ones.
Okay.
It's nothing that crazy, but just get your input on it. And then we saw that Trump is saying that he's going to ban big institutions from buying single-family homes. Mm-hmm. We got a quote here from the chief economist from AirDNA. See if you agree with that. And then we're going to go into locating and buying a short-term rental. Like we've discussed the different models of short-term rentals, as in ownership, co-hosting, arbitrage. Then we talked about the mindset and what you should do before you buy. And then we've talked about if you're going to structure the deal alone or if you're going to do it with somebody else, how you should do it. So we've given you a bunch of stuff for the pre-doing it. Now we're going to talk about how to actually locate and buy. That's what we're going to jump into today.
Nice. So a little acquisition talk.
Yeah. Some really good stuff on today's agenda. Let's go right into it.
Okay.
Airbnb 2026 prediction. This is what it says. I'll read these two little parts to you. Let's get some input on it. Travelers are stepping away from screens and quote-unquote touching grass, with interest in U.S. national parks surging 35% and bookings for nature and outdoor experiences outpacing all other categories. 65% of top search 2026 travel dates in cities align with major global events such as Winter Olympics, Coachella, and FIFA World Cup. So what are your thoughts on, you know, we're going to talk about buying these. So now when someone hears that, do they think, okay, well, let me kind of go near a national park, or should you go more something that you would want to use?
Yeah. So one, fundamentally, I love the national parks. Mm-hmm. My portfolio is usually centered around the national parks, state parks, because that's the way I like to travel. But those are very fundamental profit drivers. We're seeing the people are saying, hey, listen, I want to get out. I want to enjoy the outdoors. That is not something new. The surge, 35% surge, that's big. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good increase. Don't know really what's driving that outside of just consumer behavior saying, hey, listen, we're kind of getting tired of the digital lifestyle and we want to get out and disconnect and recharge a little bit. I think there's been a push for that in the narrative on what consumers are liking, but these are very, very fundamental profit drivers. The second part of that was those major events, you know, those 10 to 65% of the searches are cities centered around that. That's not a big surprise. You got those are major events this year, World Cup, Coachella, or Olympics, Winter Olympics. Yeah. I mean, those are always going to show a spike in demand, a spike in searches. And so those, if you're in those cities, you know, obviously you've got that increased demand. And sometimes that means increased rates that you're able to charge. Now, I'd be a little bit careful. We saw that some of these major events are increasing the search volume, which ultimately is going to kind of trigger your price optimization tools to raise those prices. Sometimes they're a little aggressive on raising those prices, maybe even be above and beyond what you would be happy with. And sometimes those properties will sit vacant. And so just because there's a huge search in demand in searching, we need to make sure that we're still capitalizing on those people that are coming in and being able to provide an amazing experience, amazing accommodations for them. No big surprise. I think that this, the consumer trending more toward outdoor experiences, mm-hmm. kind of the disconnect and unplug and recharge type of an experience. That is a little bit of a surprise. There's a 35% increase there because that has always been a very fundamental profit driver in the short-term rental world and very consistent profit driver in the short-term rental world. And so that doesn't surprise me much there at all.
Mm. Interesting. It says right here that it's the social movement to quote unquote touch grass is 85,000 posts on hashtag touch grass on TikTok. And then it looks more like solo travelers. And then up here, it says something about it being the 250th anniversary for some of these national parks. So that could be some of the reasons.
We're having America's 250th anniversary this year.
Well, so there you go. Maybe people are trying to get out.
Maybe that's what it's about, huh?
Now, America is evolving.
Yeah.
See, we're going to go right into that. See how I just did that right there?
Yeah.
I just went right into it.
Good job. What are we evolving to?
Okay. Well, we're banning big institutions from buying these single family homes. Jamie Lane, chief economist at AirDNA, said the vast majority of vacation rental managers oversee just 1 to 5 properties. So there's little institutional ownership involved. Therefore, we anticipate that this will have essentially no impact on the short-term rental industry, Lane said.
Yeah.
What do you think? Do you kind of agree? 100%
agree. This has to do with BlackRock, Vanguard, State Street going in and buying, like these big, huge hedge funds going in and buying single family homes, taking them off the market. The average consumer is not able to go buy homes and they're putting them, holding them as rentals, jumping prices up. And so this has to do with the housing affordability. Trump is trying to say, hey, listen, we're going to try to pass some rules where these big institutions can't go buy single family homes. Well, short-term rentals are single family homes, but they're also our short-term rental world. We've talked about this many, many times. Mm-hmm. This is very difficult for institutional buyers to get into because of the uniqueness of them and the like. For us, we can scale a portfolio. Institutions, it's very hard for them to place big money in short-term rentals and actually scale a portfolio because of the unique experiences that each one are kind of required to operate
at
top.
Sense.
So we've always been a mom and pop type of a business. Mm. We talk about we're a mom and pop investor base, retail investor base. Institutional investors very much ignore short-term rentals, not because they don't like it as an asset class. I've had many private equity firms, family offices call us and say, hey, listen, Sean, we know you're doing this. You're working with a lot of investors. We want to place $50 million. Can we do that? And that's not even that much money from an institutional standpoint. Mm. And the answer to them is almost unequivocally, no, I'm not really able to help you because it's very difficult to go do that without going and buying a whole bunch of just individual homes. Mm. We are a business that happens to be mom and pop retail investors. This rule is not going to pull a bunch of institutional investors out of the short-term rental market by any stretch. It was never that game in the first place and was very far from becoming that. And so, yeah, I completely agree with Jamie. Know Jamie well. And it will have almost zero impact as far as any pulling out any of those big buyers coming into the short-term rental space. They're not in it in the first place.
Okay, that makes sense. That makes total sense to me. I would think more of like hotels where they can kind of standardize everything, or it's like
But those aren't single family homes. Yeah,
right.
The institutions want to be in hospitality, and that's how they are playing in the hospitality game. Very scalable. Mm-hmm. They can go by thousands of doors. They can have huge portfolios,
right.
And then they're able to do that at a very duplicatable, scalable way of how they want to operate their business. Short-term rentals are not that.
Right. Okay. Makes total sense. All right. Let's go into it. We're going to talk about locating and buying. Let's start with the locating, of course. Let's go. We do preach the lifestyle asset mentality where, you get to enjoy these properties. It's a huge lifestyle upgrade. We've talked about this many times. So when someone's looking at locations to buy, is something they should keep in mind somewhere they even like to go or they know about that area? Would that be beneficial or should they go somewhere completely different?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's beneficial. Yes.
Okay.
I think it's a huge it makes a huge difference and it's a huge lifestyle upgrade. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, if you could build a really successful portfolio and enjoy it, why you would say, no, I don't want to enjoy it. I just want a successful portfolio. So I get a lot of heat about this online all the time. Like, you don't have to be able to use your property. That's a myth. That's a fantasy land. Well, we've been living that fantasy for a long time. So come join us in Fantasyland because it is available. So I do think that you should try to build a portfolio that you would like to enjoy. Mm-hmm. And it is a lifestyle upgrade, but it needs to be and make sense from an investability standpoint, mm-hmm. right? And so when you're choosing your location, you have to make sure we start with those property goals. How much money do I have available? How much time do I have available? What am I really trying to do? Am I just trying to supplement a lifestyle with a vacation home, or am I really trying to build lifestyle and financial freedom?
Right.
Usually it's a combination of both, right? Mm-hmm. And what do I want that to look like? That'll help us identify locations. The very, very next step that most investors overlook is the regulations in those areas. Mm. Regulations are a huge, huge deal. And it should be the very first thing that you're looking at when you start to underwrite locations. Even like, so I'm going to quickly look at average acquisition cost versus average revenue, making sure that I can at least pay the bills and make some money on this property. Mm-hmm. Secondly, can I even operate as a short-term rental? Because if I can't, it's a no-go in that market, right? We're not going to go into that market. So we're just going to have to say, hey, listen, that doesn't work. Even though it might be investable, it doesn't work from a regulation standpoint.
Mm. Okay.
So location-wise, I'm looking for properties that I would enjoy and would like to use. Doesn't mean I'm going to use them every weekend. Doesn't mean it has to be drivable distance. Like we were talking about national parks before. I usually try to center our portfolio around state and national parks. I like the outdoors. I love the outdoors. And so, but you know, my property in Georgia, before we bought it, I didn't know a whole heck of a lot about the Blue Ridge Mountains. Mm-hmm. I live in the mountains in Utah and love the Western Mountains and the Rockies, but I didn't know much about those mountains over there until I was, you know, some of our Vodacy members live in that area, own in that area, start looking at it. I'm like, man, this is pretty cool. I like the outdoors, not necessarily drivable to Georgia from Utah. No. I have to jump on a plane and go visit, but I enjoy it. And so it doesn't need, when I say you should be familiar with an area, you should be familiar with what, you know, the draw of that area is, what the profit driver is, you know, and why are people going there? If it happens to be the great outdoors, which I love, and that's what we try to do, I'm all in. Doesn't mean it has to be in my backyard. Mm. It means I should be interested in the target audience and the draw that I'm trying to, you know, if I have zero interest in the beach, why would I buy a beach property?
Right.
Right. I don't understand when people tell, you know, say, hey, listen, I'm just in it for the investment side of it. I see properties fail all the time when the owner doesn't have that much interest in the property. And because they're not able to sell a good experience. Mm. And that's the business we're in.
Mm. Emotional connection, it sounds like to me, that you got to have to your property. I like it. Okay. So episode 327, we break down regulations, how to find them, all the different kinds. We go through all the stuff you need to know about regulations. Episode 327. Nice. Go check it out. Now, someone may say, hey, well, Sean, I love to go to the beach. That's my favorite thing. But you know what? It seems like a really saturated market. We hear that all the time. Very saturated. And so maybe now I'll just go with the national parks. I hear that stat. It's a surging. Should I just go with that instead? What would you say to somebody if they're thinking, you know, I love it, but I don't want to go because it's too saturated? Yeah,
I've said this for the last 7 years since I've been talking about
this. Come
on. Is saturation equals demand. So if you're afraid of saturation, you're afraid that you can't compete and you don't know what it takes to win a game. Right. Mm. It's like, hey, listen, if I'm going to go play any sort of game and I want to win at that game and I'm afraid to say, hey, listen, I don't want to join this league because everybody in that league is better than me. That's really what you're saying. Right. Saturation just equals demand. These saturated markets, the consumer is spending a lot of money. So if you're not willing to learn to play the game correctly, you can go try to find a different market. The problem with it is you still don't know how to play the game. And so you're going to go into a less crowded market that may be less competitive. At some point, that market's going to mature and that market's going to grow up. Mm-hmm. And you're still not going to be able to compete in that market because you don't know how to play the game.
Right.
In my opinion, it is way easier to go get your unfair share of business in a saturated market than it is in some up and coming emerging market where the consumer is still not spending that much money. Mm. If the consumer's spending a lot of money there, I get really excited because we understand how to go get our unfair share of those dollars the consumer is spending. Mm. And so, you know, over and over and over again, we've been saying this. Finally, other people are starting to say it, which is good. Mm-hmm. It's good that the narrative might be changing a little bit because what everybody was saying is, oh, listen, you can't. I mean, it's why I did my case study in Cherry Log that we've talked so much about. Mm-hmm. I was on a podcast with a top trainer influencer in this space that said, Sean, you can't go to these markets anymore. You can't make money. You got to find the up and coming markets. You got to be on the outskirts. You got to find where the business is going. You know, they're like, skate to where the puck is going, not to where the puck is. And I'm saying, hey, listen, I'm staying where the money's being spent. When you start showing me declines in these areas, maybe we should have a conversation. But in all these really saturated markets, the consumer continues to spend money. And we've doubled down on this for years and years now. And finally, people are like, huh, maybe there's something to this. Maybe there is something. Maybe it is a little easier to operate correctly, to go learn how to play a game. And the advantage is, the huge advantage that most people don't realize is that the average consumer, we talked about being a mom and pop business. The average the average retail investor, these mom and pop investors in here are not willing to go understand consumer behavior. They're not willing to go figure out actually how to play the game correctly. Our listeners, we're preaching to the choir. They are. They're listening for a reason. Again, we've talked about this. We are not that funny. We are not that entertaining. We try to be educational, right? Yeah. And we try to share information that will help them gain those unfair advantages. But most people are not that. Most people are not going to do that. It gets very, very fun to go into these markets and you're like, hey, man, the consumer loves these markets, but the competitors that we think are so saturated that are going to hurt us in our business is they don't know how to play the game very good. It's like walking in and you're an NBA player and you walk in and you're playing against junior high kids, right? And that's really what it feels like at the top of most of these markets. And these saturated markets are no different. So why not go play in a game and in a market where the saturation is there? Now, the challenge with some of the saturation markets has nothing to do with the saturation. It has to do with the average cost of properties in some of those markets goes up because they are very popular markets. Right. And so your acquisition cost can all of a sudden make some of these markets a little uninvestable. It has nothing to do with the saturation. The saturation is a factor of why those properties are expensive. But the cost of the property versus the revenue you can generate sometimes is not that favorable. Not because it's not an investable market or the saturation is hurting it. It's because it is so investable that the prices of homes have gone up so fast.
Wow. Okay, that makes total sense. I'll make sure to link the case study to your property in the bio. Go check it out. Click it. It's about 3 hours long, I believe, but it's jam-packed full beginning to end of all your stuff, all the money you saved, how you did it. It's a lot of stuff, but completely worth the watch. Go watch it. Okay, now let's ask this question. What about the size and layout of the house? Right? They found the market they'd like to go to. Is that a factor?
Every market, yes, it can be, but every market's different. You analyze that market by market, right? And say, hey, listen, is this more, and most market has a lot of crossover. You can have really good 1 and 2 bedrooms and there's a lot of opportunity there. There's other markets that, and it goes all the way up to the big properties. And a lot of times there's a lot of crossover. You will find naturally that the top side and the bottom side size, whether it's really small or really big, you're going to have less competition. Usually your majority of your competition is going to be in that 3 to 4 bedroom mark, right? The bread and butter size, but it doesn't mean that that's not a good opportunity still. Most markets, you have a lot of crossover. Some markets, it is a little bit different where you're saying, hey, the opportunity actually is in the smaller properties or is actually in the bigger properties. And we don't see as much opportunity in some of those, you know, the middle of the road type properties that they're kind of catch all 3 bedroom type properties. But that's not most markets. It's across the board. You really have to look at it based on your budgets, what you can afford, because, you know, a 6 bedroom property is going to be more to buy, more to set up, more to furnish than a 1 or 2 bedroom. And you might find just as good opportunity in that market with a smaller property.
That's really very,
like, it's just data. You're just making data backed decisions when you're looking at all that. It's market specific and you're going to pull all that up in your underwriting.
Okay. Wow, that's interesting. Okay, so we talked about locating the property. Let's move into actually buying this property. Now, here are some terms that I think people should know, right? These are some things that it's useful to go over because I would guess that maybe some of these people listening don't even know what these mean. So we're going to understand some operational expenses. We're going to talk about fixed, variable, pass-through. Let's go with those three.
Okay.
Can you talk to me about fixed operating cost?
Yeah. So when most people are thinking about how much they're going to make, honestly, they think, okay, if I'm making $10,000 a month in income on a property and my mortgage payment's $5,000 a month, they think they're making $5,000, They're not, right? And so because of all these other expenses, right? Like most people are like, what am I paying for the property? How much am I making? The issue is paying for that property. You have in our game, like most people will think about their fixed expenses when they say, oh, you're right. I got my insurance. I got my HOA fees. I got my taxes. I've got my utilities. I've got maintenance, lawn care, pool care, whatever that all is. Those are all things that you're paying for on an annual or monthly basis on that property, right? What does it take to hold and operate this property? Those are all your fixed expenses. Fixed means they don't change, okay. Right? They're these fixed expenses. Variable expenses also can add up very, very fast on short-term rentals, specifically when you start to talk about OTA fees, you start talking about the your management fees. Your management fees, if you're like me, when you hire a full service property manager, right off the top, they're taking 20 to 30% of my gross revenue, depending on my market, right? And who I hire. And so that's a fixed expense or a variable expense that is based on the revenue that I'm making, right? So I'm not paying a management fee unless I'm making money. But as soon as I make a dollar, they're taking 30 cents of that dollar, right? So for every dollar I make, 20 or 30 cents is going right off the top, usually for full service management.
Wow.
So the other thing that is going to be variable, if you're covering any of those OTA fees, if Airbnb is charging you 15% and you're getting charged 15% on every single booking that you get on Airbnb, that's a variable expense that has to go out. Now, are you going to raise your rates to cover that? Possibly. We're talking about pass-through expenses now, right? A pass-through expense is something that you just pass onto the guest. It could be damage waiver, like insurance. It's a $59 per booking damage waiver, and we're going to add that to the booking, and it's going to be an expense, but I'm also capturing it on the back end when I charge my guest, right? I'm going to see it on my, when I'm running my numbers at the end of every month on my property, it's going to show me, okay, you got damage waiver insurance. You had 10 bookings at $59 each. It's $590 of an expense, but I pass that through to the guest. And so I charge them the nightly rate, and I also charge them that extra $59. So it's basically a wash for me.
Got it. Okay.
Same with cleaning. It's usually just going to be a wash. Okay. Mm-hmm. For every time that somebody comes in, I got $200 on a cleaning. I had 10 bookings. I have $2,000 expense, but it's going to pass through. And I'm also capturing that as extra revenue, right?
Okay.
So those are kind of pass-through expenses. Variable expenses are going to be calculated based on, in our world, based on the number of bookings and or the revenue per booking that you're making. And they're going to take a fee from that, or you're going to get charged per booking for something, right? And so that's going to be variable. It's going to change based on how much money you're making, how active that property is. Fixed expenses, doesn't matter whether I rent the property 100 times a year or rent it 0 times a year. I still have insurance to pay. I still have HOA fees to pay. I still have utilities to pay.
Right.
All of those different fixed expenses. And so you see all these, these fancy investment calculators. Our version of our SDR investment analyzer has been, taken in. I mean, how many websites do we find? Over the years, all that is a sheet, a fancy, Google Sheets that shows you, here's your variable expenses. It reminds you of things you should be thinking about and putting in there. Fixed expenses, debt service, cost of rehabs, all that stuff, so that you can look at it and say, does this make sense? But if you don't even understand what those numbers are to put in, it's like garbage in, garbage out. It doesn't matter whether you have the fanciest calculator in the world, the fanciest spreadsheet in the world. It's, hey, listen, here's the things that are on there. But underwriting is pretty dang simple. It's saying, hey, how much do I have in? What is my capital in? What is my debt service on that property? Which is going to be a factor of your, that doesn't, we usually calculate debt service separately, but that's going to be debt service. And then you have all your fixed expenses, taxes, insurance, HOA fees, utilities, all that stuff, variable expenses based on that property. Am I paying a management company off of my revenue? What does my cleaning look like? And then we're going to have in there on our variable expenses, we're going to have all of those pass-through expenses still listed on there, but then we're going to calculate it as extra revenue when we're calculating income projections as well, right?
Interesting. Interesting. Okay. I'll put a link to the RSTR data sense.
Yep.
I'll put it in the link below if you want to use that. Now, man, that's really interesting. Have you found over the years that maybe some people or maybe not some people, but it's a universal thing that a lot of people forget to put on. I'm thinking Wi-Fi. I'm thinking air duct cleaning. I'm thinking maybe that happens maybe once a year, carpet cleaning, and they forget to add it. Have you noticed that some people, they always seem to miss this one thing?
No, the biggest thing that I think people underestimate now, especially, is insurance cost. Insurance cost right now is in a lot of our, for short-term rentals, one, it's more expensive. Many of these areas that we invest in are more expensive. And so I find when we look at somebody's underwriting, we find, you know, overwhelmingly, that's one of the first places we go look is say, what are they budgeting for insurance? Because it seems to be the biggest line item that people underestimate what they're going to be paying. Wow. And sometimes significantly, and it can really affect your underwriting. So, so if I had to tell somebody, hey, listen, while you're doing your running your underwriting and analysis and in income and expenses, make sure you're really getting good insurance quotes that are going to cover you for what you're looking to do in the area you're looking to do it at.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Let's go into this. So now here's another thing to think about is maybe your average nightly rate won't be the same throughout the whole year. Right. Maybe it's you have high seasons, peak seasons and shoulder seasons. Right. So your nightly rate and your seasonal rates may be different. How is a good way to calculate that or keep that in mind if you're going to be doing all this analyzing?
Yeah, well, when we're running in, that's income projections now. So we were just talking about expenses. Now we have to go and say, okay, now I'm gonna project what my income's going to be. We're going to look at the comps that we're competing against. We're going to look at what the consumer's paying in all these markets. There's a wide range. It's not like, hey, listen, it's $300 a night in this season, and it's $400 a night on the weekends, and it's when it slows down, it's $200 a night. I mean, it does that, but it's a wide range, even in each month and each season. Wow. And all you're doing, we are in seasonal. Most of our properties are in seasonal markets. And they're, I mean, even if you were in a less than seasonal market, your weekend rates versus your weekday rates are going to be different.
Right.
And so it's just understanding how to pull that data. The data is available. I believe the gold standard is AirDNA. We use their enterprise level access. And so we get this, you know, their advanced level access where we can pull that information from.
Yeah.
But you're able to look at that. We look at that range. And then that we call price tier, which is your average nightly rate range. And then we look every single month. We're underwriting every single month. We go 7 years back so we can see any peaks and valleys, any indications that, like, if, you know, I might look at this last year and March might have been a really slow month. Has March historically been a really slow month, right? So that's why we look back so far if there's any spikes outside of each of those months. And so this is a game you're analyzing it month by month. And then you're just putting it together and understanding how to put it in those sheets to give you good income projections as well.
Okay, you just touched on something. I'll ask this just in case. We talked about using SDR Data Sense, our analyzer, and then we talked about AirDNA. Is there another kind of technology that we use, another kind of platform that we use or anything like that? Those are the main two?
Those are the main two. Okay. When it comes to regulations, there's not – They change so often, and there's so many layers to regulations that you really have to go direct. I would highly recommend that you're not putting it into any sort of software tool to find out if you're able to operate as a short-term rental. There's a lot of them out there trying to do it, but you have to look at the state level, the county level, the city level, the HOA level, and it's just better to make sure that you're crossing those T's and dotting those I's with each of those individual entities to make sure that you're able to operate. When it comes to data, AirDNA, in my opinion, has the best data. Most of the other data tools actually get it from AirDNA.
Right.
And so they're pulling from Airbnb and Vrbo, and they've got a really good API connection there. The data's been very good for a long time. And then we take it and extract it into our own basically fancy They're basically fancy Excel sheets, right? So that we can paint the picture of what we're trying to do.
Okay.
And really be able to look at the data the way that we want to through the lens that we like to see it to make the best decisions on the buying side. We don't rely on a bunch of fancy tools or software. We really just extract data where we feel like the best data source is. We put it into our spreadsheets. We paint the picture. We read the data. We make decisions.
Right. Okay, but let me ask this now. This could seem like it could be tough for some people. Maybe it's a little difficult. Maybe it's a little time consuming, right? And they think, man, maybe I could just get someone else to do this for me, right? Would it be beneficial for some of these, our listeners to go, can I just bypass this? Can someone just run these numbers for me? Or, dude, if you're not watching the Smart Grow, if you're not, you gotta watch, would it be beneficial to do this yourself and know your numbers, right? Or it, would it also be beneficial just to hire someone to do this for you and then just give you a property they think would be really good?
So I really throw a lot of shade on a lot of the done for you turnkey. Here's a property. We underwrote it. We found it. You just need to write the check, right? Mm-hmm. We go out. I don't do that myself, so I won't sell something I won't do. Mm-hmm. Now, do I feel really confident that I could give somebody some really good properties? Yeah. Are there other people that could underwrite and give you a property? Yes. The issue is, I look at it like, hey, listen, I just went and got you an airplane and gave you an airplane, but you don't know how to fly the damn airplane, right? And you're going to get hurt. You're going to hurt somebody else. Mm-hmm. And not that you're going to get hurt owning a short-term rental, but you could financially get damaged, right? Yeah. And so if you don't understand the game you're playing, I don't I've never let somebody else underwrite a property for me. It is not that difficult. It doesn't take that long. I want to be the one, if my name is on the dotted line and I'm responsible and I'm writing the big checks for this property, I want to understand why I'm buying it. Now, does that mean you shouldn't, you know, look at properties that other people send you or provide for you and then double check them and make sure that they work? Absolutely, that's okay. Yep. But to just take a property and I tell you, hey, Jake, you should go buy this, and you do know, you just buy it because I said to buy it.
Yeah.
What happens when it's a bad property and you call me up in 6 months? And one, what if I didn't underwrite it correctly? What if I didn't underwrite it based on your criteria, your property goals, your resources? You know, I could set you up to fail with this. I see this happen all the time. I see good properties delivered with no consideration to the person who's buying it. Mm-hmm. For example, I just saw this. A person was looking for a turnkey property and they wanted to buy a turnkey property. They didn't want to do it themselves. So they saw online and on Instagram or somewhere and said, you know, we find the property, we underwrite it, we'll design it, we'll get it set up, you buy it. And they did that. And so they ended up saying, hey, listen, we're going to buy the property. And they had to buy the property first. And then the design came and everything else. Well, the conversation was never had. How much money do you have to get this to the finish line? They ended up buying a property that was way too much. Like, they could qualify for the mortgage, but it was a 5,000 square foot property. It needed to be furnished. It needed to be designed. They used all their money to close on the property. And they have no money left over, and nobody had the conversation. And they're like, "Oh, I thought I was buying a turnkey property." Well, you were buying the property at first, and I agree with them to an extent. It was not clear, and it was irresponsible from the person selling it. But the person selling it also said, "You buy it." They were designing it. They give them all the stuff that has to be paid. You had to hire their designer, by the way. You're hiring their designer. And so they got a $250,000 design bill on the back end. They go to they're like, we're ready. It's ready to go. Let's put it in. Here's this other bill. And the person who bought the property is like, I thought I was going to be all in for this. Dude. And so it happens all the time where maybe it was misled. Maybe it wasn't. But that was because somebody wanted the easy button. I'm just not a fan of turnkey properties because I feel like you have to take the time to understand the game you're going to play. But also, man, if you're not going to take responsibility for like underwriting a deal, analyzing a deal and saying, yeah, I feel good about this, or I know I don't feel good about it, I just don't feel like you should be in the game. I don't feel like you should have any business owning something you have zero interest running numbers on.
Dude, man, I'm like squirming in my seat right now. That sounds so scary, dude. I mean, if you're like, this is a big decision, man. This is a lot of money to not like want to know the numbers, know the inner details of it.
It's not that difficult either. It's not, you know, people make it act like it's rocket science. I'm telling you, this is not rocket science. It's not that hard to run the numbers and understand the numbers.
I mean, thousands of people. The data is available.
The data is there to write those massive checks, to walk into something and you don't have the resources, you don't have the time to operate this type of an asset class. You should know that before you dive into it and buy a property.
Okay, well, let me ask you this, right? So you kind of touched on this, but I want to nail it down. The idea that getting an extra set of eyes on the deal, right? We have tons of members. Do we do that? Do we give them an extra set of eyes?
Yeah. And what? Just T-balling yes. Up. Right.
Yeah.
You, like I said, it's not that difficult to run the numbers, mm-hmm. but the first time you do it, you might leave something out. Right. You might have that insurance line item on there that is mm-hmm. way underestimated because you were going off your last homeowner's insurance policy that you bought. Mm-hmm. And you didn't realize that your short-term rental policy in a beach market is going to be 10 times what your last homeowner's policy was. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, that property is not profitable. Absolutely. We look over the shoulder, I mean, you know, in our group in Vodacy, right. and we've underwritten thousands and thousands of deals. So right. we can look at these underwriting sheets, this analysis and these pro formas and say, yeah, this looks right. Here's some red flags I see. Here's some challenges that I can see. Mm-hmm. I don't think you have enough here to get it furnished, right? Right. It's another thing we look at nonstop. Right. And I'm like, man, like, You bought the property. It's like part, you know, at the end of the day, the responsibility does not lie on the person that sold them the turnkey property. In my opinion, the responsibility lies on you.
Yep.
If you are that bold to go buy a property that somebody says is good and you should buy it without doing a little bit of due diligence on it, crazy, it's really your fault,
bro.
But I mean, that's some of the things that we look at when somebody sends us properties all the time, because they, a lot of times, first-time investors will underestimate what it takes to get these properties where they need to be to get their unfair share of business, right? We talked about getting our unfair share of business in these crowded markets. Well, that takes some capital. It takes some things to do on the back end. And what if you just didn't underwrite it correctly? You thought, hey, listen, I have $50,000 ready to go to put this thing, get it furnished and everything. And you're like, well, that's a 4,000 square foot house. That gives you just $12 a foot. That's not going to get you where you need to go to get this thing set up and designed and furnished, right? And sometimes you just don't know. And so, yeah, having somebody look over your shoulder and give you their opinion based on your property goals and the numbers that you ran to look and say, hey, listen, yeah, your first time. And sometimes you do it great, but you just second guess yourself. Yeah. It's sometimes just nice to hear that somebody says, yeah, this looks good.
Well, I mean, man, we touched on a lot of stuff here, and this is, I mean, that's really scary to want to do that. But okay, is there anything that we could provide these people that they could hop on? You got a webinar?
Let's get them in there. Twice a week right now. Okay. Right now, my schedule is set for Tuesdays mm-hmm. and Thursdays.
Okay.
And so go check out, post it. Can you put it in there?
I'll put it in the show notes. A lot of stuff in today's show notes, guys.
Lots of stuff in the show notes. Jump on though, because the webinar, I'm walking you through the process and I share some of the underwriting. I share some of those stories I was telling you with numbers behind it so you can actually see it. And you have a chance to ask those questions.
Yeah.
And then if you need more resources, we've got more for you, right? Yeah. Our goal is to help you walk into this with your eyes wide open. We don't say that just as a slogan or a tagline to sound good on a podcast. That's really what we're trying to do here at Vodacy.
I love it.
But it does sound good, doesn't it?
It does sound amazing, right, man. And it's the truth though, but that's why it sounds so good. Okay. So we got webinar and link in the bio. We have older podcast episodes that you should watch before you locate and buy. We have that. We have the STR data sense and link in the bio. And then we also have another one about regulations, episode 327 in the bio. Tons of stuff of material to go through. Let's do a little sneak peek here for next episode. I want to say we didn't give everything away for locate and buying the acquisition phase, because you got to join. You got to join Vodacy to get the full package.
Throw that carrot.
We gave a little bit out there, but come join the Vodacy family and you'll get access to way more stuff. But for next episode, we're thinking maybe design. Should we kind of hint that out?
I mean, we just dove into acquisition a little bit. Right. So let's, next step is set up design.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Let's do it.
That's all we have for today. 38 minutes. Good episode. Tons of stuff.
Okay. We'll wrap it up. You guys, we appreciate you spending your time with us. We know it's valuable and it doesn't, it means a lot, and we don't take that lightly. Hopefully you're getting some value out of these shows. We're sharing some of those things that maybe you already knew and need a little bit of a reminder of, maybe some new stuff that you're like, oh man, that's not something I've thought about before. Mm-hmm. If you know somebody that would like to be a part of these conversations, it's always appreciated if you share the show. Those things help that show grow. And it's the only way we grow, because we don't run ads or sponsorships or any other promotions on this podcast. And so if you like the conversations, you know somebody else that's in the game that would like them, share the show. Those things are appreciated. If you don't have anybody to share it with, but you want to help us, like it, review it, whatever podcast platform you watch or listen on. Those things help us because the algorithm will then share it for you. So if you're like, I don't know anybody else, but I appreciate what you guys are doing. Those things are much appreciated. So come on, give us a like, review on whatever platform you're on. So final, most important thing at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today to start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends. Cheers, buddy.
Cheers.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.